back again. We are here with the Experience Grind podcast. Oh man, we have music now. We're fucking fancy. Not only do we have intro, outro music.
Yeah.
We've got announcement music. We are the Experience Grind podcast.
We are.
Oh, I thought you were going to do the boop, boop, boop,
boop. Oh, again. Sorry. I dropped it.
Oh, you're behind the curtain now.
You set it up and I just watched the ball fall.
The great powerful Oz is full of tricks.
Yeah, it is.
You found us out, audience. I'm sorry. We're shutting it. I'm done. I'm just walking out.
There were no trumpets. It was in
click,
the mouth.
Click, 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 click. That was me shutting the door.
Is that a door shut? I don't know.
God, we're fucking stupid.
Yep.
So hello, we are. My name is Kyle. I'm joined by my affable host,
Ryan Demarest.
And he is a gorgeous man. I say that every time, and I will continue to say it, because it's true, people. It is very true.
Thank you.
Basis of the show, we talk about shit we want to talk about.
Yes.
Sometimes that's video games, sometimes that's movies. We alternate week by week. The reason we alternate is a lot of times people that do video game-centric podcasts crank them out. We want to give ourselves times to fully experience that.
Yes.
So we alternate weeks by weeks, giving us 2 weeks to experience each game, 2 weeks to experience each movie. Although the movies generally don't take as much to get into.
Nah.
But that's the reason that we distribute the episodes the way that we do.
Yeah.
It might seem weird if you're coming back at a later time and going through all these, but that is the method to our madness. And if you don't like it, eat a bowl of spit. I don't know.
That was very nice. I thought you were going to say another kind of bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I did not, a big veiny bowl?
Yeah, a bowl of eyeballs.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah, well totally. Done. I know well it done. Was.
That's forearms. What... Yeah. Giant forearms.
Dude, is this supposed to look like a dick?
Thank you. That's an Always Sunny reference for those out there.
You don't get it.
And if you don't get it, you just shouldn't be listening to our podcast.
You really, probably should not.
No. So that's how we're going to start the show. Condescending.
Yeah.
We
hate you, audience. Please stop listening. So a couple things that were pointed out to me and Ryan.
The rails. We are just going way off.
I just did it right there. We kind of have these safety blankets we fall into when we're speaking. My favorite one, I just did it again, is that I like to reference the word I do it quite often. You will probably hear it quite often. I am going to work on it. My good friend Ryan here, he likes to drop in the word.
Interesting.
He does drop it quite a lot.
And that's fair.
That's fair. And in fairness, you drop interesting way more than you do that's fair.
I do.
Here's the thing that we're going to do. We're owning it right now.
Yes.
We'll try to work on it, but we want to put it out to you on the audience. Make it a fucking game. Open a beer when you listen to this podcast. If you hear me say, or you hear Ryan say interesting, you take a drink, and I guarantee you, this podcast will get better.
That's an interesting concept you have there, Kyle.
That's fair. So, this is the Experience Grind podcast, and one thing we've not talked about is grinding for experience.
Yes.
The whole namesake of this show. So to get things loosened up, to get us talking, to let people know more about us, our question for the week this week is, Ryan, what game would you say you've grinded the most on? Now, that could be most time put in for least effort. Whatever you want it to be, what have you grinded the most on?
Okay. Well, I've interpreted this question as, what game have you grinded through, meaning you're not really enjoying your time with it, you're just sticking to it to get it done.
Fair enough.
And I have two games.
Okay.
And they're very different outcomes. One is Dark Souls.
Okay, I could totally see that.
Which, yeah, if anybody's played Dark Souls, they know exactly what I'm talking about. It's an unforgiving, brutal game that just kicks your dick in at every corner. It trolls you, it just is so fucking unfair. And I feel like I hated every minute that I played that game. I really had to force myself to turn it back on. Oh my god. And then once you get to like Blight Town, which is easily the worst area in any video game ever.
Sidebar. When you went into Blight Town, did you come in from the top or the bottom?
I came in from the top because you told me.
No,
from the bottom. I went in the shortcut. Like I didn't have to go long way.
In the top, you probably would have not played the game again.
I probably wouldn't have.
I was stuck on Blight Town coming from the top the very first time I played it. I'm not lying, like a week.
Yeah.
Not like a week straight, but like I'd play for a little bit, be like, fuck this, walk away. So, sorry, continue.
But no, I mean, that's it. I was playing it with my wife, and I think she was really into the world and the monsters, and like she was the one.
Easy to
like,
do. Fantastic in that
and
sense. Yeah.
It has a great design to it, but the gameplay just fucking aggravated me like every step of the way. And so I finished it, and I was like, I thought it was going to be, I fucking hate this game. I don't ever need to play a Dark Souls again. But as soon as I was done, I was like, I kind of curious if what Dark Souls 2 is about. Well, Bloodborne, I kind of interested in that too. So now I want to go into these games, even though I hated my experience. The other game, which is the complete opposite outcome, Assassin's Creed.
Ooh, okay.
I have no love. I don't understand any positive reactions to Assassin's Creed. It is...
I hate this series.
It's an inane game.
Yeah, it's garbage. I will say it's all garbage.
Yeah, it's repetitive. Yeah. It's a lesser form of Prince of Persia, which were fantastic games, unlike the Xbox and PS2
era. I like Sands of Time. I didn't really get into any others, but Sands of Time was really good.
Sands of Time was great. Warrior Within was
the
wrong direction.
Guys?
That's the Two Thrones. That's the
one. Okay.
And that one's actually really good.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when they got back to like their kind of fun whimsy. The Warrior Within was like
super
fucking
serious,
like Creed is playing and he has like fucking emo hair and there's like a half naked titty woman. They just completely got like,
hey, you know the moral like Devil May Cry and you know the God of War games? Yeah, make this game that.
Yes. Yeah, they took Prince of Persia and tried to make it a little bit edgier. Okay.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You can't, if you can't tell, I'm using heavy finger quotations on edgier, and it just, anyway, Assassin's Creed, just garbage. I don't understand any love for that game.
I played the first one, I played for 2 hours, I have never touched another Assassin's Creed since, and I feel so good about it.
I skipped the first one because I heard all the criticism, and then people were like, Assassin's Creed 2 is much better, they got all the problems fixed. And I played through that entire game. And there are still problems. It is still repetitive. There are missions where you literally walk behind somebody for 20 minutes listening to them talk. And it's not interesting exposition talk like we'll get into with Metal Gear Solid later on. It is fucking boring history jargon that doesn't really relate to your game.
Time.
It's time wasting. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's a time waster game.
Yeah.
And it just it's the game that it's like Microsoft Excel in a game format. You're just checking boxes to finish it.
And the as far as I know and have read, the Assassin's Creed only get worse with that as the series goes on.
Yeah, I agree. I've not played any because I've just been so repelled. And I even own Assassin's Creed 3. The Xbox One I got came with Unity and Black Sail. Never gonna fucking touch them.
Yeah. I don't. Yeah, no fault. Assassin's Creed sucks.
So
people.
Over them.
Don't play them.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I know, but that is the game I grinded on.
Okay.
What's some examples for you?
So I guess outside of this week's game.
Oh,
spoiler! No, it was fun. There's a tie. I guess longest time I've put in, if according to my Steam rankings. I think I have 270 plus hours on Borderlands 2.
Yes.
A lot of that was a grind, I will admit, but a lot of it was fun. But I think my answer is going to be, and I'm actually still playing it now, I just restarted playing it, because I have one trophy left, and I'm grinding out to get one trophy in Final Fantasy 13.
That is absurd. Why the fuck would you do that?
I like this game. We can get into it at some other point, but it is a serious grind for me at this point.
I hope we do.
Because, and here's the... is the only real complaint I have with this game. And all other Final Fantasies, when you get the great, super awesome, powerful weapons, you come across them in the world. They have this lore behind them. In Final Fantasy 13, you buy them in a shop through your menu.
Yeah.
All the amazement and mysticalness is taken. It's not there.
Which
and
wouldn't be an
that,
issue because you do have like the summons, but even the summons are so underwhelming.
If you're using
in
summons
Fantasy
in Final Fantasy 13, you're
broken.
Playing it wrong. You're not
they're
doing it right.
They're just broken.
Yeah, they serve no purpose. They're flashy. They add nothing to the game.
I don't even think they're flashy. I was like completely underwhelmed and underimpressed at every single one.
I watched them all when you get them, and that was like, I'm done with you. But so in 13, to get this last trophy.
Yeah, I'm curious about this trophy.
It's to own every weapon in the game.
Are you fucking kidding me?
And to get every weapon, you of course have to buy the base model of each weapon, and then you have to level up that weapon because they all have three different forms.
Right.
And to level them up, you have to buy items from the shop again that cost certain money, and you feed it into the weapon, and it grows powerful and more powerful. And the only feasible way to do this is to fight the only Adamantoids in the game that's in this one section that has a rare chance to drop this item called a Platinum Ingot, which sells for 150,000 gil a pop. So you just fight this thing over and over and over and over and over.
This This is hurting my head. So you're literally spending all this time getting all the weapons so you can kill a giant turtle to get something that gives you a lot of money that you've already theoretically spent getting all these weapons.
Oh, yeah. The fight takes like a minute and a half.
Oh, my God.
But after you fight it, it, of course, disappears from the world. So if you don't get that item from it, you hit start, you select and restart. So you have to go all the way to the menu, load the game, run out, fight him again. If you get the ingot, then you run to the save point and then hit start, hit select, go all the way to the menu, start everything over again. So it is a serious grind, but I'm one fucking trophy away from platinum.
You have a compulsion, my friend.
I don't, and that's the thing. I am not a trophy or achievement hunter, but the fact that I'm so close on this one, I'm just like, fuck it.
Just give it up. That's Left 4 Dead. Left 4 Dead, I have all the achievements except for one, and it's like kill 64,000 zombies or some absurd number.
I do know
it's
that
like,
one, yeah.
I'd have to grind and play a match over and over again, and I did the calculation for like 30 days.
Wow.
And it's like, fuck that. Just like, you know what? I have 98%. Like,
here's
done.
The thing. It
Walk
doesn't
away.
Bother me now because I put on my wireless headphones. I listen to other people's podcasts. And I just sit there. If I still smoked weed, it would probably be even more fun. I don't. So therefore, it is a bit of a grind at this point. So,
man, kudos to you. Or I just, man, I cannot wrap my head around that.
Hey, it's my experience grind. I'm grinding it myself.
That's good. I'm glad for you, but I cannot fucking empathize with that.
Yeah, I don't expect you to. It's my own cross to bear.
When life gives you lemons, you say, fuck the lemons and bail. That's my motto when it comes to that kind of shit.
You're very Cave Johnson in that aspect.
That's nice.
I like it.
It's a reference.
So let's talk about these fucking games, man.
Yes.
This is week number, I don't know, 5?
I think this is week 5. Week 5. Yeah, we have been doing this for a month now.
This is longer than week 5 because
I think this is episode 6 if you count the first one as two parts, but this is our 5th week of recording.
Okay.
I think. I have previously said, I don't know numbers.
Well, it's our number 4th ranked favorite video games.
Yes.
It is a video game episode. So
this is a video game episode.
Heads up to anybody else that wants to bail now.
If you didn't get this by our video game question that we just asked.
Or by the name of the fucking episode, which is Metal Gear Solid and Mega Man.
Yeah.
That's no.
Here's a hint. They're not movies.
Yeah, they are not movies. This is a video game episode.
No, Metal Gear Solid could be a movie.
Oh, man, it could be.
And that, my friend, is what you call a segue. Should we get started with Metal
Gear?
Yes,
please take the helm. I'll let you talk about Metal Gear a lot, and I will just interject here and there.
Sure.
And
well, I will start with a story real quick.
Okay.
So PlayStation is a console that I had to buy for myself. And I can talk about like my history with consoles because I've got some interesting fucked up stories about myself and just how weird and obsessive I was about stuff. PlayStation's one that I didn't get as a gift. I had to buy it myself.
Wow, okay.
So as a kid, I think I was maybe 11 or 12. Saved up all my money from Christmas, all my birthday money, saved up so I could get it. And my first game was Crash Bandicoot. I went to Toys R Us when that was still a thing, bought my PlayStation, Crash Bandicoot. And then for Christmas, it was the best Christmas ever. I got Final Fantasy VII and Metal Gear Solid, both of which are on your top 5.
Wow. That's a big Christmas for you.
It was. And then I also got the strategy guides with them too. So I had like no trouble with like some of the stuff we'll talk about later that Kojima puts in that
could
stop
you.
Yeah, could stop you in your tracks. But it was the best. So immediately, like, I put in Metal Gear Solid, and I'm like, I have the mindset, I'm going to play this for a little bit. This is just like, I have a little bit of time today. I'm going to play this just for a little bit and then do Final Fantasy.
You really wanted to play Final Fantasy.
I wanted to play Final Fantasy, but I didn't have time to invest in that story. So I was like, I'm going to play a little bit of Metal Gear Solid. 2.5 weeks later, I had played Metal Gear Solid twice through.
Wow.
Haven't even touched Final Fantasy VII.
Wow. That's
enjoyed
a lot.
It so much.
Okay. So good choice.
I loved
me.
It. It's a great choice. Yeah. And this is Pan's Labyrinth is one that I was like, God damn, that was a good choice, Kyle. Like that could easily be my top 5. And now that you think about it, you know what? Take Kiss Kiss Bang out. Put Pan's Labyrinth in there. That's a great choice. Metal Gear Solid is probably the one on your games list that would be that choice for me.
Cool. So right now I'm winning the podcast that has no points.
You are so
at
far.
All.
You
but
are
I am winning.
Winning.
Yes.
That might change later. But right now, you have the winning choices. God damn, Metal Gear Solid is just such a good game.
It is. And I'm only sad that I couldn't get it higher.
Yeah, and I think, I, in all honesty, looking at your list, I think it might should be higher.
It
I
might
think
be,
maybe it should be higher.
In a retrospect or a revisit we do, it might move up. I don't know.
Yeah.
But please continue.
But so Metal Gear Solid, I will kind of give a basic synopsis. It's one of the first video games that utilized like the CDs to its full extent.
Yep.
Games moved from cartridges, which have a very small like RAM space on it, very small memory. So you can't really do a lot, to CDs on the PlayStation, which includes, you know, full motion videos, orchestral quality soundtracks, just the best. And this game starts off with like an opening scene with subtitles as you're playing, just like a movie would. It has credits giving you like the voice actors
the
as you're going
credits.
In. And yeah, and like you said, and I completely forgot, is like the first little opening tutorial, if you'll call it, is you try to sneak past these people, which you're given like the basic gameplay mechanics. And then you get onto an elevator.
It's so well designed.
Yeah.
Man. It teaches you everything.
Yeah.
Right there.
It does. And it's like within, and actually, I'm going to just skip ahead. I was going to give a summary, but the first 30 minutes of the game, you are given all the information you need for the rest of the game.
To play the game.
You are told about Meryl. You're told about, not Otacon. Otacon's a surprise later.
Yeah.
You're told about Liquid Snake, Foxhound, like the whole plot. You're given history with Donald Baker. You're introduced to Naomi. Everybody in the first 30 minutes, this game is just so smart. It's so smart.
It's so, and man, all right, so I want to jump in here just
yes,
a little bit
please
here.
Please go for it.
Before this game, video games and movies were a completely separate entity. Like,
mm-hmm.
you might have movie tie-over crossover games, but it never felt like you're actually playing the movie.
I don't know. Street Fighter, the movie, the game felt like I was Jean-Claude Van Damme jumping around.
Fair enough.
Bad punching movie. People.
So wait, so you're saying it felt like garbage? Like
yes.
The movie?
It felt like garbage, like the movie. Exactly.
Zing!
That is a good zing.
So
suck it, Raul Julia. Oh, I'm sorry, you're
oh,
dead.
Oh, man. He was the best part of that movie. Come on.
He was, but... Nah.
For me, the day I destroyed your village was
like
a monumental
saying,
point in your life.
That's a really bright corner in that pile of shit
yeah,
in the corner.
So this movie, or I'm sorry, I just called it a movie. This game, though...
It's pretty much a movie.
It totally bridged those two things. Kojima was incredibly smart in doing it. And it was the first one. And I think a lot of games after this have adopted this.
Yeah.
They try to present a cinematic story with their game. And it's because the way that Kojima did it, it fully legitimized the story. It hooked you from that first seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You don't... I had never played a Metal Gear before I played Metal Gear Solid. I'd never played
no.
one of the Super. I was not
yeah.
familiar with this at all.
Yeah, originally
but,
they were for the Nintendo and the
yeah,
Famicom.
But you didn't need to be. You no. understood that you were some military special forces badass being
yes.
sent in to do some mission in Antarctica.
Yes.
And you're like, okay, I can get behind that. I feel like a badass. They're sending me in stealthily... You're coming out on the submarine. All the backstory it gives you lets you know that you are a complete badass.
Mm-hmm.
And Snake is one of the biggest badasses in game history.
And he is.
And he's not mopey like Kratos or
no.
just. He's not one dimensional. There is a lot.
Kratos is
character.
Very one dimensional.
Yeah, he's just angry.
He is.
Yeah.
He is a badass, like you've said, but he's also like deeply flawed.
Yeah.
And he has an actual arc throughout the series and
yeah.
this game alone.
Yeah.
But you know who he's modeled after, right?
Oh, Snake Plissken.
Snake Plissken
yeah,
from Escape from New York.
Mr.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell.
Yeah, exactly.
Who
so,
I used to hate and I have come to love so much.
Kurt
and
Russell?
He
makes great choices, man.
He does make... I hated him a lot because my mom had a crush on him, so I had to watch a lot of
How
Kurt Russell
her.
Movies. Well, I had to watch
How
a lot of them.
Her
and
find
a
him
lot
attractive.
Of... She really liked that movie with him and Goldie Hawn where he's white trash and owns the houseboat.
Oh, Overboard.
Overboard, yeah.
Yeah. What about Captain Ron?
See,
Captain
Ron, I liked,
great.
But I didn't know that was Kurt Russell when I was a kid. I was just like, oh, yeah, Captain Ron's really cool. Yeah, but man, I love Kurt Russell. And the fact
oh, yeah.
that Snake is based on him, Snake is the only person that I've ever known outside of Joe Dirt that can
rock
the
a
mullet.
Yeah.
But Snake goddamn makes that thing badass, whereas Joe Dirt, it's silly, but it's funny to look at. Snake's never looks silly. You're like, holy fuck, man. He is owning that mullet like nobody ever.
Yeah.
But he does not
and the
have
bandana,
it in Metal Gear Solid.
It's just
yeah.
the best look.
Yeah. He doesn't have it in Metal Gear Solid. I think because they didn't have the rendering capabilities on the PlayStation.
No.
He does have it in the opening when they give him the haircut, when they draft him. Did you notice that?
I didn't
they like
that.
They go recruit him and they're giving him all the shots and they're telling
oh,
him what
yeah.
he's got to do.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got long hair. He's got the mullet.
That's also...
Shave it.
probably my least favorite part of this game.
It's very...
It's like, I think a 30-minute chunk of just like security camera footage of him getting his shots and talking about the mission ahead. And this is where you're introduced to like a bunch of the secondary and tertiary characters.
How crazy is it too that those opening segments where he's getting just those booster shots is what fucks him throughout the entire rest of the series? Because that is the Fox Die spoilers for the end of the game. Right. Yeah, that's where he gets that from Naomi.
That's awesome.
That's insane. Okay,
that's good.
That little thing.
And yeah, that's so. The basic story here.
Yeah. Break it down for me, Ryan.
I will try. I'm going to try to do this as simple as possible. So Snake's a badass. He is reported from an old friend who he has no longer been in contact because he's pretty much retired in Alaska along with some other people that you'll meet later on in your journey. But he is recruited once again for like one final mission.
Of course.
To go to this base in Alaska on Shadow Moses Island to stop a group called Foxhound, who is composed of a bunch of members of his old team, if I'm not correct, or I'm not mistaken, who include Liquid Snake, Psycho Mantis, Sniper Wolf, Decoy Octopus, Vulcan Raven, and Revolver Ocelot.
Now, see, I don't think they're his old team. They're just, he used to run Foxhound, and when he retired... They're the new members.
Okay.
And Liquid is the new leader.
So I misinterpreted this.
I don't think he had any personal history with any of the characters.
I guess not, because they do monologue and they're telling new information. Yeah, we would have to do that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I completely misinterpreted the opening. All right, so it's just Foxhound was a thing.
Yes, that he was a part
of. Now it's all
of.
New members. Yes. That makes sense, because Meryl is also part of Foxhound too, but she didn't want to follow with the insubordination. Anyway... This group, which I just listed in detail with their names, they have pretty much access to a nuclear missile.
Yes.
And that's all we know going in. And we have to stop them. We just have to stop the nuclear missile. And then it evolves from there, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. But that's pretty much the plot.
Mm-hmm.
Is you go to an island to stop bad guys.
Yeah. And you're called out of retirement. Yeah. I'm getting too old for this shit.
Yeah, which doesn't sound like it's really cinematic or anything new. But for video games... This is like groundbreaking shit in 1996, 97 when it came out.
When did Metal Gear 2 come out? Because, I mean, it was like...
Had to have been the early 90s.
Yeah, late 80s, early 90s. And so it also gives that reference like, oh yeah, this is Snake.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, had I played them, I could get them. He's like, he's coming out of retirement.
It was Metal Gear and then Metal Gear 2, Snake's Revenge, right?
Yep.
Now, Metal Gear 2, Snake's Revenge is not a Kojima game, I learned.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, the first one was... And then he went off the project, and then they brought in the Snake character, and Kojima liked it. And when he came back on from Metal Gear Solid, he was like, I'm going to continue the story. Like, that was a good touch. And it's also interesting, in my research, I found out Kojima has had problems with publishers and Konami from the start. Like,
I could do an entire episode on Kojima and the problems that man has faced. I
think we should.
I think it's sad. I get it to an extent. Because the man spends a shitload of money. But the man makes... Dude, he's the last visionary we have left in video games. Like, the real visionary.
Well, I mean, if you're going the cinematic route, but, like, I would also say, like, Shigeru Miyamoto for, like, Mario, Zelda, that stuff. Like,
yeah, okay.
Goddamn, I challenge you to not put in any of the Mario games for the last 10 years and have a smile on your face at one point or the other. Because, like, it still works. And, like, that guy is doing interesting...
Outside of Sunshine, I'll give it to you.
I'm so glad you said that, because I fucking cannot stand Sunshine.
Yeah, Sunshine is garbage.
Awesome. But, like, Super Mario 3D World, I just got a Wii U this year.
Yeah, it's fun.
I played through that, and, like, the fucking box is, like, Cat Suit Mario. He's a fucking cat. He's not fucking a cat. He is a fucking cat.
There it is.
And I'm just like, this is stupid shit. And as soon as he, like, does an attack, and, like, the pounce and the way he acts, like, I'm like, okay, I'm in. Yeah. Like, I was wrong. I was wrong. Like,
I'm
why was
Super
I ever...
Mario World because you can be Peach, and I'm a big Peach fan.
And Rosalina, which I dig.
I'm a big Peach guy. I like Peach.
Yeah. Yeah, is this going to be an Elastigirl situation? Or are we going to have
maybe somewhat similar, but I like to play as Peach a lot. I'm also a big fan of the color pink.
I hate her jump. I can't. Mario, for me, was the best. Just like that straight middle of the road. Toad didn't jump high enough, and Luigi, his jump
he's got that
fucks
weird jump,
me up. Yeah.
I like that they kind of adopted that Super Mario 2 thing.
Too, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
This is what we call a side rail or a detour.
Yeah, we'll see if this gets left in the podcast
Let's
or edited
shift it
out.
Back. Fuck it, I'm
so
editing.
So, Metal Gear Solid. You know who's a badass like Mario? Snake.
Wow. Yeah.
So.
They also rock badass mustaches, although Snake doesn't in this game.
He does not in this game, but there
That's
are
not,
a lot of...
That doesn't show up till 4. Revolver Ocelot rocks
Ocelot
a
does.
Fucking nice mustache in this game.
And that's it. I don't think Vulcan has one. No. He has a fucking crow on his head, and he's
pretty badass.
Is he Native American?
He is.
Okay.
Yes.
I mean, that's I jumped to that.
He's Native American, or he's full Inuit, or
Inuit. Yeah,
Eskimo.
He could be Inuit. You're right.
Because he doesn't wear a shirt. I think he's Native American, which is why they focus on the crow.
Well, let's just talk about Vulcan Raven right now.
Please do.
The worst voice actor in the game by far.
Yeah.
And I say this only because everybody else is fucking amazing.
But worst voice actor, most intimidating. Outside of the Cyborg Ninja.
Cyborg Ninja's more intimidating, I think.
Dude walks around with a giant fucking minigun, man. That's pretty fucking intimidating. He's tough as hell.
Maybe.
I thought he was pretty tough.
I don't know. I was never...
He's walking around the Antarctic winter with no shirt.
Although so is
Liquid. He's
so
only
you're into the thematic toughness here. But like when I play this game, I didn't fear him. It wasn't just like, oh shit, that's Vulcan Raven. I feared the sections when you're fighting Sniper Wolf and you are literally powerless and like bested. You are bested. Vulcan Raven's slow and dumb and you can run around. Like it's not a big issue. But Sniper Wolf puts you in your fucking place unless you cheat... Or, like, you know exactly, like, how to use the smokes to steady your aim, and you have to be, like, pin perfect to shoot her in the hallway.
The smoke, you mean the, what is it?
It's not the smoke, it's the pins,
Pinzatam.
Pinzatam. It's something, yeah.
Sickness pill, or keep, whatever it is.
Yeah.
Keeps you level, calms you down. Yeah.
But, like, you have to do so much stuff for her.
You better have a
shitload overpowered. Whereas Vulcan Raven's just like, it's the simple boss mechanic. Like, you run around and attack in the butt. It's the Dark Souls mechanic.
Yeah, but before that, I just like the... Yeah, somatically, he's presented as this giant tough guy. And he...
Yes.
He is still an intimidating figure because he carries a full,
machine gun.
Like, the spinning one that the dude from Predator uses.
Yeah, yeah.
He also carries a backpack like full of ammunition for it, and he's a massive dude. He's strong.
He is. But so anyway, that's my minor voice acting gripe. But everybody else is amazing.
This game is fully voice acted too. The entire thing is voice acted. You're not reading a script like, here's a section where we're voice acting, and then you're gonna read about. Every line in this game is delivered to you.
Which, again, is very new. Because, like, on the Super Nintendo, you'd have to scroll through dozens of texts for, like, RPGs these story-heavy games. Everything's voice. And I think that could be, like, possibly a negative, too. Because a big thing in this game is the codec.
Yeah.
And it's essentially just, like, a face chat. It's FaceTime. But back in the 90s. And it's Snake talking. It's just his head on a completely black screen. And somebody else's head, and they just talk for like sometimes 20 minutes at a time.
They do it a lot.
And there's a lot of talking, and it can kind of.
Yeah, it gets worse as the series goes on.
It does. I think.
That's my one big complaint with it, too. But.
Yeah.
You got to cram a lot of story in, and it's cheaper than doing cutscenes. And Kojima is always one that people are harping on him to cut money back. So.
Well.
That's what you got to do.
It's the love hate thing because the Metal Gear series is all about these indulgent cutscenes.
Yes.
And I kind of love it, and I kind of am frustrated at times because it does ruin the flow of the game. And then there's sometimes where it's just like, you're telling me shit I don't need to know, dude. Like, you're not pushing the. Your first interaction with Otacon, who is like this nerdy scientist who you save who pisses his pants, goes into like this long diatribe about otaku anime.
Yeah.
It's like, this has no fucking place in the game. I don't need to know about this. Well,
not even that. When you meet the DARPA chief, when you save him, dude, he goes on for like 20 minutes about nuclear intercontinental ballistic missiles. God, I cannot get that phrase out. Intercontinental nuclear ballistic missiles.
ICBMs.
Yeah, something of that nature. But
yeah,
I learned more from this fucking game than I did from watching the news. Like, I had no idea. But
that's a good thing. That's an interesting thing. Fuck. Interesting. That is an intriguing thing that you just said, because sometimes the dialogue feels like the news.
Yeah.
It does feel very... just like by the numbers for information. It's not necessarily moving the story forward. It's just like, here's a history lesson for you about, you know, this event in history. Here's a history lesson about this event in history. And
yeah,
it's a minor digression.
I get why they're doing it. And it's another thing that I like about the series as a whole is that they bring a real sense of realism to the series. Like,
they do.
They don't
even though
like,
there's psychic soldiers and whatever, it still feels very grounded.
It's based in this world in America. I think each game takes place a couple, like, I think this game came out in 97.
But
it took place in 2001
in
storyline. And so each game that came out was actually a couple years ahead in the future, and they all advance more.
Okay.
Like, I think Metal Gear Solid 2 came out in like 2002, but
so like the near future where it's
they
like,
were always
it's
based
slightly
in the near
tweaked,
future,
but it's not like Back to the Future 2 where it's like we're gonna throw in fucking flying cars and hoverboards and all this stuff. It's just future enough, that.
But
there's
they do
a psychic
get out
soldier,
of there
but that's it.
Yeah. I mean, then you get into nanomachines and giant walking bipedal tanks that shoot railgun loaded missiles. But
yeah, and that's the thing. Digress. I really appreciate the simplicity of this story. Because I have not played Metal Gear Solid probably since those first two times. No, since Twin Snakes when I got on GameCube.
Twin Snakes was really fun. It's silly.
It is silly. All right, well, I guess I'll sidetrack again. I was originally starting Twin Snakes, and I was not digging it. I was not digging the colors.
Yeah.
It was very gray and washed out.
Yeah.
So I put in like my PSN download of Metal Gear because I don't have the original PlayStation disc anymore. And I was like, it's much better on the PlayStation 1. Like, it's much more like vibrant. Like, there are rich greens and blues. And like, the fucking GameCube port is just so watered down gray blog.
And I think that's just the GameCube.
And
I mean,
you know, and here's something I caught. Was when I switched, because then after that I was like, I'm sticking with the PlayStation 1 PSN version. I think that's the better one, even though I don't have issues with the GameCube one, like when it comes to like the added cutscenes or whatever.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people do, and they're kind of shitty. But those people who think they're shitty, not the cutscenes.
Yeah, exactly.
But
I knew where you were going.
Thank you. I gotta clarify.
You gotta clarify with me, brother. Well,
that's right.
Level. That's why we do this podcast.
Same level. That's right. But so no, the PlayStation. What was I? I don't even know what I was saying anymore.
The muted colors of the GameCube compared to the crispness of the PlayStation, and why you preferred it.
Oh, so the difference I noted was all the voice acting is the same, except for Naomi. Naomi changes between the two, and
really?
It's the same actress. It's Jennifer Hale, who did Female Shepard from the Mass Effect,
really?
Who is a great fucking voice actress.
She was Naomi, huh?
She is Naomi. And in the PlayStation 1 version, she dons like this really bad Russian accent.
Oh, yeah.
And then in the GameCube 1, they completely cut it out, and she's fucking American. She has like this very regular plain accent.
I remember that now.
And I never noticed this until I had played those so tightly together. But yeah, that was something I noticed. And I was like, I think I prefer the not Russian accent. Like, that's one thing I think Twin Snakes improved upon.
If you're not going to do an accent right, you shouldn't do an accent.
Yeah,
I get you there.
But
well, I didn't know that was FemShep, though.
It is. It's Jennifer Hale. And I notice her voice now whenever I play a game.
So did you ever play Metal Gear 3? Metal Gear Solid 3?
I have played all the Metal Gears except for 5.
So here's a fun fact that most people don't know. So the voice of the boss is the voice of the female newscaster from Family Guy.
Trisha Takanawa?
Not Trisha. That's
Diane.
Yeah, Diane Simmons.
Yes. Okay.
That's the boss, dude.
Huh.
It's wild. And when you really put that together, it's like, oh, I totally sidetracked you. That was me.
No, that's okay. This game, I wrote fucking 2 pages of notes for this game, and yet it's still hard to talk about this game because it's
something
so
that
perfect.
Needs to be experienced, too,
like
I feel. It's,
yeah,
it's so hard
yes.
to describe what is happening in Metal Gear. It really needs to be experienced.
And that's, like, an issue with the later games. And I'd be more interested to even talk about the later games because they get so bogged down in this mythology that just it's a convoluted fucking spider web of plot. And it's just like, I don't fucking care. This is Big Boss or this is Snake or is this what I just... Nah. I tune out, but Metal Gear Solid is just so perfectly tight, and I just kind of wish...
It could have stopped with
I
it.
Wish it stopped there.
Yeah, it could
because
have.
Because I don't think... And I liked 4. 2 was fine. I don't like 3.
I liked 2 a lot.
I really don't like 3.
I like 3 a lot, too. 3 is the hardest one to go back and play. I will say that. because I like.
Well,
these...
that was the first like free viewing camera too, which this game the first two Metal Gears have like a top down view mm-hmm. that's more tactical.
Yeah.
And I love that. And the third one experiments and they're like, we're going to do, you control the camera this time and yeah. you can look wherever you want. And I think that kind of breaks the game a little bit.
Story in 3 I like because it's very James Bond.
It is. Well, they have the theme song, oh, Snake Eater.
And again,
a James Bond theme song.
That is one of my favorite songs. I still listen to that to this day.
I was okay with it.
2, I think I'm one of the only people in the world that didn't like...
You
didn't I can't
shit your pants when you found out Snake wasn't the hero?
I did. But I didn't have a problem with Raiden.
Yeah.
And unlike 99% of the world, and I think more people have come around to Raiden, how badass he is now, also because he's now like the new cyborg ninja.
Yeah, which I have Revengeance, Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
That's a fun game, man.
Which is by Platinum.
Platinum, who's
and
fantastic.
I bought it just because I played Bayonetta recently. I was like, this is fucking amazing. They did Metal Gear. I'm in.
Have you beaten Revengeance?
I've not played it yet.
Dude, it's
really
good.
Because I went straight
good.
To Bayonetta 2, but like as soon as I finished Bayonetta 1, I was like, back catalog, every game Platinum has made, I went yeah. and purchased.
So I own almost every Platinum game because I'm a big Platinum fan.
They are becoming one of my favorites.
I have Vanquish.
Yeah,
Vanquish is
I
great.
Do too. I
they have
yet.
Just recently they made a Transformers
Devastation.
Game, and I don't care at all about Transformers, but I'm looking forward to playing this game.
Yeah, I'll buy that one too.
They are doing the sequel to the game Nier, however you want to say
it's Nier.
Nier. Have you ever played this game?
I have it. I own it. I haven't played
Dude,
it yet. I picked it up on Amazon for $8. I was like,
oh my god, we are going to do a Nier episode because
I'd love to because this trailer for the second one got me so fucking pumped
for real. Like. And we are totally sidetracking, and I don't even care at this point.
Who cares?
Because it's our part. Like,
also, fuck you.
Like, yes, also, fuck you. Nier is easily probably number 6 on my list.
Oh, no shit. It's that high.
It is. Dude, because it... I can't even...
Over Bayonetta.
Absolutely over Bayonetta. Just because of the atmosphere and the world building, and the fact that it's a side sequel to a completely separate series...
series?
The Drakengard series.
No way. It's tied to those?
Because at the end of Drakengard 2, after you beat the final boss,
yeah.
your dragon and you are transported to Tokyo in 2008, where you are immediately shot down by attack helicopters with missiles because they're like, holy shit, there's a dragon. What the fuck is going on?
That's the end of the second one?
And, yeah.
I never finished the second one.
It's like the true final alternate ending that you can get. And so... Based on that, when they blow up the dragon, it releases some crazy disease that they've never seen, which eradicates the entire world, and that's where Nier starts up.
Huh.
It's so fucking wild, man. And then, here's
my
favorite...
This has just become my next game to play.
Here's my favorite part of Nier. So, the guy that did the soundtrack for Nier decided that, you know, the world has collapsed. It's all these... It's like years in the future. Language
yeah.
has devolved. So the chick that he had singing it, all the vocals are like combinations of different languages. So like it dips into French and then to Spanish
huh.
and then German and
all
then
in the
English.
Same song.
Yeah,
it would
dude.
Do this.
And like all the and so he's like he's imagined that all language has formed into one. Oh, dude, it's
I
so
like
beautiful.
That.
It's and the soundtrack is the it's my favorite soundtrack to any game, hands down. We can
oh,
do.
Oh, that's interesting. I would so, also side note. I would love to do a. Top 5 soundtracks for
we
movies
will
and video games too.
Yeah, we will do it, but oh, I man. Cannot wait for you to play Nier because we are going to do a Nier episode.
I think we should. All right.
Yeah,
so absolutely. Done. That's on so, the docket. Look forward to a Nier episode.
It's coming up in like a year, people.
And then when we're doing the Nier podcast, I will side note into Metal Gear again.
Yeah, yeah.
And we'll just
we'll totally make it equal. So let's
Freeform.
Get back into Metal Gear.
Our conversation is as convoluted as Metal Gear sequels.
Yeah. Ha-ha.
It is.
It's a meta concept.
It is. That was intentional. We did that on purpose. We planned that shit.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
We didn't plan anything?
No.
Nope.
We never do.
We don't. All right. So, yeah. God damn. All right.
Give me some of your
points.
Give me some of these notes.
Yeah, I guess I'll just go through
yeah.
some points then. Some things that date the game.
Yeah,
PlayStation
okay.
1 is when story and the dialogue kind of started, and there's some really bad dialogue translations from the Japanese because Kojima, if you couldn't get by the fucking name, is a Japanese developer. And it's like... There's a famous line from Resident Evil like, oh, you are almost a Jill sandwich that just doesn't fucking translate in English. And
what is it?
It's from that's it. Like
no, okay, but what line?
Oh,
in...
so in Metal Gear, it's he says to Naomi, He's like, if I didn't have your suit and shots, I'd be a popsicle right now. And it, like, he's this badass. And he says like lines like this. And it's like, I'm taken out of it. You're not badass saying things like this. And it's like, I can see on the page, like, this worked so much better in Japanese, didn't it? I know it did.
Yeah, I could see that.
And I don't mind because it's humorous. And even though like the joke completely falls flat, like, I appreciate the attempt for humor because so many fucking games are just dark and gritty and
so
just
fucking
dreary.
Gritty, yeah. Like, and you get, and that's the Americanism in it.
It is, but. And fuck that, but man, so there's that. The top down view I talked about, like, I fucking love the top down view on this camera. I think narratively, this game is not only the best of the Metal Gear Solid series, I think it's one of the best. It's very clever in that it sets everything up, like I said, like within half an hour, it sets up so many plot points and plot twists. Like, you're introduced to Miller and they talk about like his backstory in a way that kind of leaves it open. So like when a twist comes later, which is he's Liquid Snake, he's the bad guy.
You've
he's
not
been
talking
you this
to
entire
Miller.
Entire fucking game.
Miller has been dead this whole
yes.
game.
Yes.
He has been dead.
But the way he like introduces this, because I knew this twist going in. So hearing it, like they don't like. They don't paint themselves into a corner. Like, they know exactly what they're going to do. And they leave these plot holes open. Like, when he comes on, things aren't quite right. Like,
no,
you
he's a
don't
little,
fully
yeah,
trust him.
Yeah, he's a little weird.
Yeah, and the same thing with Naomi. Because Naomi has this little arc, too, where is she a spy? Is she not a spy? And, like, they also leave her in, like, this gray area. Like, they don't paint themselves into this corner. And it's just so smart. The first 30, like, I can't get over this first 30 minutes because it's just so smart. You're given, like, foreshadowing to Meryl. They talk about this problem girl in, like, a cell, and you get her stuff. You get the DARPA chief stuff. You hear about, like, this other guy infiltrating the facility who's taken out 3 guards, and he, like, completely slaughtered them. And that turns out to be Cyborg Ninja, who is just this, oh, my fucking God.
Dude, Cyborg Ninja was one of the greatest things that my 13, 14-year-old mind had ever encountered.
Yes, it's like...
Oh, my God.
It's a great character design. It's completely fan service, too, because it's a cyborg ninja. Well, like, what else do you fucking need to say about that character? It is...
So, in a game where you are the ultimate badass and you shoot and fucking kill everything, when you shoot at Cyborg Ninja, what does he do?
He dodges it completely.
He doesn't even dodge it. He fucking deflects that shit with a fucking samurai sword. He's like...
That's right. Because, like, when you fight him, you only use your fist.
Yeah.
And that's...
Okay. Like, come on and hit me, Snake.
Yes. That's another thing I love about this game is every boss battle is very different.
It's all different and unique.
So, you have to... So, like, the first time you see Vulcan Raven, you have to use chaff grenades to blind the tank he's in and then throw frag grenades onto him.
Yeah.
Then the next fight is, like, Psycho Mantis, which is... We could have a whole fucking podcast on the genius of Psycho Mantis, which is a psychic character who can read your moves. And he knows exactly what you're doing. He reads your memory card. And if you're on the PSN network, it doesn't quite work. He just says something to the effects of, like, I see you like Konami games, which is like a shout out to the publisher. You don't like to save very often, do you? You're very ballsy, Snake. And like, he'll taunt you. He'll read your memory card. And how you beat him is like, he is unwinnable. If you don't like know the trick, and the trick is taking your controller and putting it into slot 2, the second player slot, that way he can't finger quotes read your movements coming.
He's totally confused by what's happening. So in the PSN version, with you playing on a PS3 controller,
you have to go into the start menu and do
switch.
Assign controller
okay.
slot
that's what
2,
I was wondering
which
okay.
is yeah which was a workaround. But it's just, and so
it's dude.
Oh
again,
my God.
At 13 or 14,
this
that
is
was
mind-blowing.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Fucking yes. Yes.
You had no idea. It's like, what? That's how I beat this guy? And then he actually becomes sort of a pushover once he can't know what you're doing.
He does.
But
he
getting
does.
To that point is pretty fucking fantastic. And he is a pretty terrifying boss. Like
He is. And, oh, my God, he is.
He's very thin.
Yes.
He doesn't walk. He floats everywhere.
He's essentially in bondage gear, too. Yes. He's dressed almost like a gimp. He has, like, the gas mask and just very creepy. Whenever a boss dies in this game, you get a 20-minute monologue after they're done. And this could be a bad thing, but I love it. It humanizes the character. Snake, I think last week we were talking about the gentlemanly kill, which is, like, I respect you, and that's why I'm gonna have to kill you. And that shit was in Drive. It's in Metal Gear. Every single boss you kill, like, he takes the time to listen to them, let them get their stuff out, to say what they're gonna do. And like, Psycho Mantis has like this one moment where he's like, he relates to Snake about his father. Like, Psycho Mantis had to kill his father because he thought he was a freak, and Snake did the same thing. Snake killed his father. I don't remember right now off the top of my head how, but they have like this shared connection.
He burned him to death with a match and a bottle of hairspray.
There you go. Thank you. I knew you'd pick up that.
Although,
spot.
Spoiler, he doesn't kill him. He shows back up in 4.
He does. He does. And it's just like this nice scene they have, and then he's like, Psycho Mantis goes, I'm terrified. Please put my mask back on so my final
His
moment.
His face is all fucked up,
yes,
too.
Yeah, and that's
he
another
thing.
He
has no nose.
But he's, put my mask back on so I can be alone with my thoughts while I die. And Snake does it. Like, he could be shitting it, and because, you know, he essentially tried to kill Snake. He manipulated Meryl, who is his newfound friend slash love interest.
Yeah.
And that's an issue we can get into, is the casual sexism of this game, which is really bad with Meryl. Let me finish this. But this gentlemanly death, it's just so perfect. But all right, so I brought up sexism, so let's go into that, because Meryl is constantly condescended to when being talked by Snake. She is chastised. She is controlled by Psycho Mantis. Like, some of the first things she says is like, "Do you want to sleep with me? Am I like, I'm so hot for you, Snake? Make love to me." And it's like this really weird, jarring tone. And then, like, it wouldn't be so bad if that was it, but, like, they really nail this theme of, like, Meryl's just a dumb kid, and if it was a guy, it wouldn't be an issue, but it's a girl. And then they bring up this make love to me Snake stuff, and they constantly focus the camera on her butt, and that's, like, a fucking plot point, is her butt.
Yeah, that's how you decide who is the real Meryl.
You have to watch her butt because of a camera cue, which is brilliant, because you see it in a cutscene and you see
her butt wiggle.
Use that into the gameplay, and that's a brilliant design, but it's also kind of like, that's also kind of shitty on you too, Kojima. And it's like that Japanese sexism racism that always gets by in these games.
See, and that's where I disagree.
Oh,
I mean,
go for it.
Well, because, all right, so.
No, please do.
Japan is a completely different culture from us in America.
Yes.
They do not have the weird sexual idioms that we have.
No, they have vending machines filled with used panties.
Japan is a very pro-sex country. Which is weird, the fact that they are...
That's very nice of you to say.
they appreciate sex, and they're not afraid of the things that come with it. But
yeah,
they also are a country that is dying off because...
I would attribute that to more like Europe. It's like that pro-sex, like very just free... Japanese culture seems, yes,
it's
very
fetishistic. It's, and I can appreciate that.
we won't
get into that in the podcast, but I can appreciate that.
Kyle
but
may or may not have ordered some Elastigirl DVDs from Japan.
I've not ordered those. But maybe at a point. But no, but...
It'll be a low point.
You know, it's not an excuse, but Kojima is a big fan of the woman figure. It's very present in all of his games.
Very noteworthy in the newest one, which I've not played, so I don't know how they treat Quiet, but that is a character that is practically naked for naked's sake.
They do explain it in the story. I don't want to spoiler. No, we can explain it.
Go ahead and spoiler, because I got a counter.
Okay, so Quiet is based off the same... she's the same makeup as... The End from Metal Gear Solid 3,
who was
also the sniper, which is what Quiet is, but he's also got part plant DNA. Quiet has more plant DNA.
So here's
the thing. She breathes through her skin. So she has more of her skin exposed to take more of the air and nutrients from that. So that's what happens, and that's why she's like that in the game. I mean, it's not perfect, but that's the reasoning behind it.
See, I've not played 5, so I didn't know that
she
they
also,
explained she had more plant DNA, but I knew
she also
the
doesn't
end
have vocal cords, which
disease.
Is why she doesn't talk. She can only hum. She also drinks through her skin, so she doesn't drink through her mouth. She absorbs what she is more plant based than the End.
Okay.
But it's why she can stay and snipe for as well. So
You don't think that could,
giant spoilers.
You don't think that could possibly be just like a backwards thinking reworking? Like we have this almost naked woman, and she has a shower scene where she's bathing for nutrients, but like all the men are watching her. Well, let's just go back and write that she needs that because she's plant DNA, just like the end. But she's more plant
I don't think
DNA.
It was retcon, because also Kojima has very. Very plainly stated that he wanted to create a character for sexy cosplay.
Well, there you go.
And that is quiet.
Ding, ding, ding. You're done.
Kojima is the fucking... He's honest. He knows what he's doing.
That's true.
But
you got to admire that he's just outright honest and flat about it.
He's doing, much like us in this podcast, he's doing what the fuck he wants to do.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, don't fucking play
it. That is true. That is very true.
Nobody's forcing you to play this game.
That is, yeah. And that's, I think, could be said about all the Metal Gears. Yeah. And, like, the people who are like, oh, 2-hour cutscenes. It's like, well, then don't play it.
Don't fucking play
because
it.
Because the people who love Metal Gear get off on those 2-hour cutscenes.
Exactly. And like, I am one of those people. Yes. I love what
and
he
I
does.
Did, too. Yeah. I did, too. Like, I think I maybe like 4 more than you do.
I'm sure you do.
From what you said.
I've tried to replay 4, and it's hard, but...
I like it. But, yeah, so... Anyway, that's the only thing I could see is just... That Japanese sexism, and that's it.
I'm weird, you know. I'm pro feminism. I'm pro women's choice. All that shit. Don't take my sexiness away from me, though. God damn it, man. Come on.
You can have sexiness. All right. So we were talking about Bayonetta. I think that's a game that does it well. And it's like it's full cheesecake, and it knows what it is, and it parodies that. And like, so not only can you get your sexy if you want it, but you can critique on it and comment on it and make it a thing. Whereas like. I feel like they don't critique or comment enough in Metal Gear, and they could do that more if that was the intention. But it literally comes across as just like Kojima said himself, it's like, I just want a sexy cosplay outfit.
Well, she's also...
And Meryl's not as bad as Quiet.
No, and...
Not even close.
Not even that. Like, you're coming down on Meryl, but at the other end of the spectrum, one of the most badass characters in this game is a woman.
I agree.
And that's Sniper Wolf.
Sniper Wolf is...
She fucking wrecks. Like, she is vicious. She's brutal. She's cold. She's calculating.
Yeah, I think she is... Because you were saying Vulcan Raven's badass. I do think she is, like, the most intimidating boss
in absolutely.
This game. More than Liquid, the final boss. More than Ocelot. Like, she is intimidating. You piss your pants when you see, like, Meryl get shot in front of you.
Because you are at a complete disadvantage from this character every time you face off against her.
Yes.
I beat her by using the missile that you can control.
I didn't know this. I fucking sniped, and I played over and over again.
Ooh, man, she kicked your ass, didn't she?
Not this time. This time, went on YouTube, and I saw this Nikita missile thing. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah.
Like, because when I was a kid, I sat there for 2 fucking hours replaying over and over again, sniping her out.
I love the Nikita missile
and
as a kid, so
this time
I
was like,
yeah.
Not even. Nope, not even. Just going to go on YouTube and see the best way to do this. And I was like, you motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Just a Nikita missile, and you guide it into her.
Boom. That's it. So much better. And you can stay
behind
cover.
They didn't have YouTube when we were kids.
Nah, but even still, I figured it out only because...
You son of a bitch.
I like the Nikita... I use that fucking thing all the time because it was so fun. I was like, what? I can control this?
See, I didn't. I only did it in like the, you come to a section of the facility that is like electrified
on the floor.
Yeah. And you have to guide the missile to shoot the switch off. And that's like another thing. It's just so many great puzzles. But Metal Gear, I cannot get it.
Let me come into this. I got some questions for you on Metal Gear. Who is your favorite boss?
In all of the Metal Gears?
No,
just
in
one?
Metal Gear Solid, who was your favorite to fight?
Ooh, interesting. Intriguing. God damn it. Interesting again. There you go. Take a drink.
So I'll interject while you think. My favorite to fight in this game is Revolver Ocelot.
The first one with the DARPA chief tied up?
Yeah,
exactly. Is the DARPA chief
Yeah, he's tied up and he's ricocheting bullets all around. I just like that. Because, again, that's another bot where you're actually kind of at a real disadvantage.
Yeah.
And it shows off the badassness of Ocelot, where he's ricocheting things. He doesn't have to see you directly to fucking hit you. He's such a good sharpshooter with these fucking pistols. He's just like, ba-doo, bing. I like that. It really gives credence to Ocelot.
Okay. I would not have picked that.
No?
I think that boss fight is fine.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a bad boss fight by any means. I think it's fine. I think I have to pick the Sniper Wolf stuff.
Cool.
Like, either the first time or the second time when you're out in the open. Like, I think they're both really... No, that's a lie. Because, I mean, Psycho Mantis, you just have to give it to Psycho Mantis.
Psycho Mantis is cool.
It's just the most creative boss in any video game. It's so creative.
So what... Okay, one other question, and I will also
I like
answer
Severwolf
this one.
As a character, but I think the boss fight of Psycho Mantis way better.
What is your favorite part of this game?
I don't know. I like the meta in this game. Like, at one point, to talk to Meryl, you have to look up the codec on the back of the PlayStation 1
That is
one
really cool.
Bought.
Yeah, and...
I like the stuff that just, like... Put the controller to your ear, or it says put the controller to your arm, and it vibrates to give you a shot, so you simulate it. And I just like how Kojima played with like the player. I think, and he really dropped that shit off for the sequels because you'd never get this again. Like they kind of dropped.
Not
that
so involved with this. I totally agree.
And I think I enjoyed that the most.
And that's what makes this game magical.
It is. Yeah. And that's you're right. Like. I can point out flaws because there are flaws. Like, I think
Absolutely.
The second half of the game is a little bit too backtracky.
Yeah.
And, like, even... God, all right, so Ocelot tortures you at one point, and you can tap really, really fast on the circle button, like, 5 or 6 different times. And if you fail, you have to restart. And Ocelot even says, and this isn't, like, another one of the meta breaks, where he's like, oh, it's been a while since you saved Snake. I bet if you just or if you submit now, Meryl dies, but you don't have to start all over again. You won't have to go back an hour and play through everything and see all those cutscenes. And like when I was a kid, I was like, well, fuck that. I'm going to tab O real quick and like save Meryl. This time I was like, yeah, you're right. Ocelot, you have a point. And I hit select and I submitted to the torture and Meryl died.
If Meryl dies though, you get the active camouflage at the end of the game.
You don't get the is it the bandana?
She gives you the bandana, which is infinite ammo. Otacon gives you the active camouflage, which makes you look like the Predator.
Yeah.
Also, it's one of the coolest things. And that's what the ninja's wearing, which will segue into my favorite part of this game.
Yes.
Which is the hallway coming into meeting the ninja. There are just all those dead. There's like 15 dead soldiers that are, and it's so bloody in this hallway, and there are walls smashed, and the lights are flickering. Dude, this part fucking creeped me out when
I was like
a kid.
It's like a horror movie.
It is fantastic. The atmosphere is so on point on that.
I can, because this is fresh in my head. It's so good. You walk around a corner after seeing all these bodies on the floor, and you just see a guy suspended in midair, bleeding from his insides, just dripping to the floor. And then, like, the camouflage on Cyborg Ninja just starts to flicker, and you can see him holding the sword through this guy just up in the air.
It's so good, dude.
It's
so
such an
good.
Effective and creepy scene. And then you have to fight that motherfucker bare-fisted, and it's intimidating.
He's the best.
It's so good. So, to wrap it up, maybe has flaws, maybe doesn't age perfectly, but it is just such an amazing game. And I think it's a game that anybody who considers themselves a gamer, they just have to play. If you have not played Metal Gear Solid and you play games, you need to go back and visit it, because it's
maybe
great.
If we were smarter too, we would have made Metal Gear its own episode, because I could still continue talking about this.
I know. Well, the bright side is I think Mega Man 3 is going to go much quicker, because it is just such a short game.
And that's another, you know.
It's like the story there is like,
maybe
bad robots, let's kill them.
Maybe we'll do Metal Gear Solid 2.0 and we'll revisit it and talk about it more.
I think we should go into the future sequels too.
Yeah,
just have
I'm totally into that. Maybe we'll do a whole segment on all the Metal Gears. I will totally play them again. I will look for any excuse to play them. So,
yes.
So wrapping it up, I guess, let me ask this question of you, Ryan.
Yes.
What was your experience with Metal Gear Solid 1?
So it wasn't a grind. Good. It was not a grind. Mm-hmm. The only way it could be considered as a grind is... I've played this game so much and I'm familiar with it, but like it was enjoyable as soon as I started playing. Like I got wrapped up in the story again, and I think I appreciated it more after playing 2, 3, and 4
you're more adult.
It's the best narrative.
It's a more adult game.
Yeah, so. I don't think I had the attention span at the time because I was 12.
Or even the world concepts that are bringing to you.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. Well, good. So I'm glad.
It was a great choice. Definitely belongs in your top 5. Nice. And in all honesty, you might could replace Walking Dead in my top 5. My 5 choices are just fuck it. They're fucked.
Winner of the podcast people here.
Yeah,
it's
so
me.
Far.
It's Kyle.
So
you
far.
Heard it. You heard it.
I think I'm slurry enough yet.
So that is the end. We're going to move on. We're going to do my game.
Yes.
The game that I had to end up playing.
And what game is that, pray tell?
That was the game Mega Man 3.
A great game.
It It is a great game.
For the Nintendo Entertainment System.
I was a lot more excited about it going into it than I was eventually playing it.
Ah.
This is the first game I have had to grind for the podcast.
Yeah.
But once the grind started, it actually this game gets a lot easier. Once you get over a hump, then it becomes a lot easier. So
I agree.
I had Mega Man 3.
Yes.
Which was your number 4 favorite game, and we'll get into that a little bit. We did spend a whole lot of time talking about Metal Gear, so I will actually kind of
fly through this a bit. This one's not going to be quite
as long. It's not very deep. There's not a lot of shit going on behind the scenes in this. So,
are you kidding? You didn't pick up on that Snake Man penis reference?
Dude, Snake Man controls the world.
Dick analogies, am I right?
So this game, my first note here is, and this is a reference to earlier in our podcast even, so pick up on this if you will, if you're smart enough, Ryan. I think you will be.
I might not.
Before there was Nintendo Hard, or I'm sorry.
Nintendo.
Before there was Dark Souls
Hard. I was
Hard,
Nintendo Hard when I was playing Mega
before
Man.
Before there was Dark Souls Hard, there was Nintendo Hard.
Yes.
And that spawned from games like this.
Mm-hmm.
And you will actually find that I think that Mega Man 3 is very similar to the Souls series. And I will point these things out in time.
Yes. I will let you. I will not interject yet.
But yeah, this game is fucking hard. It is completely unforgiving. It will kick your ass. You will be mad playing this game. Constantly.
Cheap deaths.
They're not cheap. Much like Dark Souls, every death here is teaching you something.
I think it's a troll. Because like you'll get to jumps where things will pop out of pits at you.
Yeah.
And you'll never know that until you die.
But
so you have the next to time, always die.
The next time
you learn from it,
you don't die.
But is that not is that first death not cheap though?
It's see that's the thing. I don't know if it's cheap per se because Dark Souls plays that way with you.
Yeah, and I
Dark
would,
Souls.
In fairness, I would say Dark Souls is cheap.
Yeah, I disagree.
I know, and a lot of people do.
Dark Souls is it's going to teach you. It's very trial by error, which is what Mega Man 3 is. This game.
Yes.
It kills you to teach you the lesson to not do that again. And you don't do that again. And then you get a little bit farther. Mm-hmm. And then you die again.
Yep.
And then you start over. And then you get a little bit farther. You get past that point. And then the next point that killed you. And then you're like, oh yeah, fuck those points. What the hell just happened? I died again. There's a lot of that. And that's...
Yeah.
That's where I draw a lot of the similarities to the Dark Souls series from, in that it teaches you by punishing you.
Yeah.
It's your choice whether you want to continue putting up with the punishment.
I don't disagree with that at all.
Dark Souls, I feel, rarely does the game screw you and kill you more than you screw yourself and kill you by being overzealous. The only time that really the game screws you and kills you is when you go somewhere you're not prepared for. And you
which
kind
is
of,
everywhere because the game doesn't have a path for you to lead on.
Exactly. But it also kind of does because you can go somewhere and get one-shotted. You're like, I should probably not be in this area yet.
But you get one-shotted, though. That's the thing.
Yeah. But Mega Man, it's got, what is it, 9 different levels.
Eight starting out.
Eight. Yeah. Yeah, I'm
because
sorry.
The middle is his
is
face
you.
Looking and with his eyes.
His eyes direct. I like that. That was a very cool part.
That was a Mega Man 3 original. They didn't have that in the second one.
Compared to Dark Souls, whereas it's just one open world where you are free to traverse it how you see fit. There is a certain logic to this game. It's very rock, paper, scissors in its bosses where one boss is weak to the power of another boss, which you gain from killing that boss.
Yep.
The hardest part is killing that first boss without a weakness.
Yeah.
My first boss I went for was Snake Man.
Needle Man is the way to go.
That's a lot of the things I read said Snake Man first.
I think Needle Man's the easiest myself.
I wish I would have.
Because I think his stage is really easy if you time your slides with the needles that come up and down. I think his stage is easier to get through.
And is Needle Man weak? Or strong Snake Man. Oh.
I mean, he is, but you can take him down pretty easily.
But I'm saying Snake Man or Needle Man is strong against Snake Man. Snake Man.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I should have done that. I went Snake Man first, and it was a grind. And as I mentioned at the very beginning of our podcast series, Snake Man is my favorite boss.
So that's why you went with Snake Man?
Big part of it, yes.
Okay.
I wanted to beat Snake Man. This game is a lot harder than I remember it being as a kid.
It's not easy.
Well, I don't know.
Us adults with our slow reflexes.
Is that what it is?
It is.
Because
I don't
remember beating this as a kid.
Oh, really?
I just remember not caring.
See, I remember playing through all these on the Nintendo as a kid and being like really good. And then I bought the anniversary edition. I was like, oh, God. But when did I start sucking so bad?
This is a game I never owned. I remember renting it a lot.
Yeah.
From the local grocery store when it had a video and Nintendo rental section.
That's pretty crafty.
Before we had sophisticated video rental stores.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so it's very, very Dark Souls-esque in that it's teaching you by punishing you.
That's fascinating that you're comparing it to that because I have such an issue with Dark Souls. But yeah. Mega Man, I'm like A-OK with.
Yeah, but...
I wonder if that's because of the open world.
Do you see the similarness that I'm bringing to it? Yeah,
I do. And I think because Mega Man's linear, that I know, like, well, I just have to get better at this part. Whereas Dark Souls, maybe you're just questioning, like, maybe I should have gone to a different area first. Yeah. Maybe I didn't hit this boss. Maybe this. Whereas Mega Man's like, no, you just have to get better right now. It's like, okay, maybe that's why, but you're right. They are.
It's weird how they're very.
They are both.
The way that they teach you to play the game. Yeah. I thought that was very interesting because I thought Dark Souls was kind of the first of its kind, but it's really not.
No.
It's doing a lot of different things and pulling them together. Mm-hmm. But Mega Man, yeah.
Well, that's why I think many people like Dark Souls is because it's a return to form because you don't have these hard games that trial and error. They make you really go back over and over and over again until you know how to play the game the way the game wants you to play it.
Yeah.
And I don't think those games exist nowadays aside from
the
Souls.
It's very hard. It's very hard to not find a game that says press X to walk.
Yeah.
Within the first 2 minutes.
Yes. Yeah.
So.
You're not wrong. Games are much easier
nowadays. A big part of this game for me, and I've noticed it's happened before, and I feel it's going to continue to be a theme throughout. The music in this game is fucking fantastic.
It's so goddamn good.
Dude, like, I rated it as a 10 out of 10 exclamation point.
Yes.
And especially that opening song is so epic that... People are going to turn this podcast off right at that point, but fuck them.
If
holy
you want,
shit.
You just name a boss. I will do their theme song in my mouth. I know this soundtrack inside and out.
It is so unique and so catchy and so 8-bit. But man, they nail everything and it makes everything stand out. That is, each level is so unique. They all have their own theme. While they might not all be so cool, like Magnet Man's thing is that there's magnets, but they play very little part in the overall level.
If I remember correctly, because I get him confused with Gravity Man, is his level the one where you go up and down on the wall?
No, that's Gravity Man.
All right, so that's 5 then. That's okay.
Yeah, Magnet Man's thing is like the only time that magnets really show up is that there's ships that fly by and they kind of can pull you up, but then they keep flying by and then you're just back on the ground. They never happen over a jump, so it never screws up a jump. It's kind of like a gimmick. So
that shit's in Mega Man 2, those cheap magnet pull jumps like Heat Man's level with the disappearing blocks and then you get the magnet suckers. That's why I didn't put Mega Man 2, because I didn't want you to go through that, Kyle, my good buddy.
Well, it's funny you say that. I still kind of had to go through that because of the ending. The ending of this game, you fight every boss from Mega Man 2.
Yeah.
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 I did not know
I
that.
I love
going.
That.
I fucking hated that.
I love it. It's
after
just,
I beat the first all the bosses, I was like, all right, here we go, Wily. I'm going to fucking take you out, Wily. I've been kicking your ass.
Then you get the Wily special stages where you have these mini bosses that are all repeats.
And not only that, okay, so you fight 8 bosses, and then for the second part, they condense it down to 4, but there's 2 bosses in each level. You got to beat 2 bosses. You don't beat it, and you only get 3 lives as Mega Man.
Yeah.
You get 3 chances to beat 2 bosses. If you don't do it, fuck you. Try again. Whole level.
Yeah, it's rough.
They have checkpoints, but they're actually, especially I've noticed on the second stage where you fight 2 bosses in each one, they're really weirdly placed. It's not immediately after you kill the first boss. And there are, in fact, a lot of cheap segments, and I do find this cheap. Where after you beat the first boss, the next room you go into, there's something that's probably going to kill you, and you have to start all over again rather than have that nice, easy checkpoint.
Yeah, and that's...
That That was the biggest part of the grind for me.
The NES hard. And
oh my
that
god,
was
dude.
Really, and Mega Man 3 is about when they perfected the difficulty. So this is difficult, this is hard, yes. You should thank me that I didn't make you play 1 or 2.
I do.
I think 2 is a slightly harder. 1 is unforgivingly brutal at times. Just the way they have you do some of the jumps that are super cheap, and yeah. There are no checkpoints.
There are even some, like, even in Snake Man's level, the level I played first, there are some jumps where there's no even risk of falling, but they are so, like, no margin of error for you to land, and then you have to keep
the last possible second, and if you don't, you jump too early, you're fucked. You're dead, and you start all over again.
And not even that. Like, again, on the Snake Man level, there would be a platform underneath me to catch, but to continue on, there's, like, a ladder up in the top left, and I'd have to jump on a platform in the middle. You have to have, like, you have to be standing on this exact pixel to land on that, and there was, like, no room for even a little bit of wiggle room, even in that one section, and that kind of drove me nuts a little bit.
Yeah. I can't counter that. You're right. This game is
brutal.
This is hard.
It's hard, man.
It's hard.
Another comparison I have here, to Dark Souls. I come back to Dark Souls a lot, because that's a series that I love, and I found it's weird that I love Dark Souls. I didn't have that same love playing through Mega Man 3, even though they have these similarities. Mega Man 3 is very unforgiving, and there is no hand-holding. There's no direction. It doesn't tell you which boss to tackle first.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, figure this fucking shit out, man.
Yeah. Well, it's back in the era when there weren't... I think there were strategy guides, but I don't remember there ever being strategy guides for Mega Man. Yeah. It's just like, you try shit out, and then you go to school and you tell your friends.
It doesn't
like,
even...
that's how you learn the stuff, was just word of mouth.
It doesn't even tell you that, like, certain bosses are weak to other bosses' weapons. It just, like, it's like, oh, hey, you got Snake Shot. Hope you know when to use it.
I think it's for Gemini Man?
I think so. I wish, and that was one thing when I was looking at my notes, I was like, man, I really should have wrote down these weaknesses, but I didn't, so we're not going to focus on it too much.
Yeah, it's okay.
You'll figure it out. Do what I did. Please follow a guide what order you should take.
Yeah, if anybody wants to play the Mega Man games, you should not do that without looking on GameFAQs or like some wiki real quick to see the order you fight the bosses in. Because that will minimize your frustration.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still going to be frustration.
It will be hard. But again, it's a very steep learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
But once you get over that, once you start to get some boss weapons, it does get a lot easier. The levels are still hard. But another nice thing that I liked is that if you lose all 3 Mega Mans, it doesn't fully reset you. It just lets you start off with the bosses that you've killed. Mm-hmm. There is also a password system. I was even easier. I had the PSN download, so I could actually make a save state.
Okay.
Because it's essentially a ROM of this game.
Yeah, I played the anniversary edition last, and they do the same thing.
So I never had to actually put in a password, but you can do passwords for what bosses you have completed.
And those passwords are such bullshit, like the grids with the dots circles.
And the different colored dots.
What a dumb fucking idea.
You got to do what you got to do with the limitations you have.
So. But like, all right, so you didn't play this game as a kid.
I did play it as a kid.
Oh, okay. I drew down fucking grids and how to do the dots for every...
Yeah, see, I rented it, so I never really cared that much.
God, I cared so hard about this game.
I liked it. And, you know, Snake Man has been my favorite character since I was like fucking 6 or 7. So I've always liked him. I don't know why, because even replaying it, his weapon is the worst weapon. Hands down.
Yeah,
it's awful.
The search snakes
They're
pretty
totally
bullshit
worthless.
Aside from the boss you have to use to beat them.
And even then, like, because of the fact that they come out and then fall right down.
Ground,
yeah.
And they'll jump over them, so you have to time it just
so
perfect.
I just found I was jumping into him and shooting as many snakes as I could.
I think during one of the final Wily bosses where he's in the spaceship, don't you, like, jump up and throw the snakes into his little shield, too?
No, I actually used Top Man Spin and took him out in, like, 2 hits.
Ah, okay.
Thank you, Internet, for that tip, too.
There you go.
I did not figure that out on my own.
That's the theme of this episode. Thank you, YouTube.
Yeah.
YouTube.
Yeah. YouTube. Oh, my God. You use YouTube for everything, everybody.
Saving gamers' asses since 2002.
Whenever it was implemented, yes. It's a fantastic tool.
It is.
Some of the enemy designs were really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them were not. Some of them were a little...
I like to hear your pros and cons on the boss designs. Like, who's okay, well, cool, who's not.
I have boss designs as a completely separate. I'm talking about just stage enemies.
Oh, okay.
So,
okay.
Enemy designs, a lot of them were cool. Hands down in this game, all of the sprite work is fantastic. Like, Capcom in the 80s on Nintendo knew what they were doing. What the hell has happened to you now, Capcom?
I still like Capcom.
You are a shell of your former self. Much like Konami and much like all great Japanese companies.
Well, Konami only makes mobile games now. They're not doing console games.
They don't
anymore.
Even make mobile. They make pachinko.
That's it. Yeah. The Silent Hill pachinko reveal. I'm like,
there's going to be a Metal Gear pachinko too.
Is there?
Oh, yeah.
I'd go to that casino if it was here, but we'll never get it.
So I love the sprite work. Some really cool enemy designs I liked. The parachute guys in certain levels, they were really well designed and really well implemented because they pushed for a cautious gameplay. You
I think
couldn't
it's the
just,
me tools, right?
They're in two or three levels. The and they always show up. Here's an actual nice trick, though. Once you get Rush Jet,
yeah,
you can just zoom underneath all of them.
Oh, yeah. And Rush Absolutely. Is so overpowered in this game. If you know how to use them, you can skip through so many hard parts.
And a nice another trick, on Rush, the entire time if he's in Rush Jet mode, if you're jumping, he only uses energy when you're standing on him.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God.
Which is great.
I'm all about breaking game systems and using them to my advantage. I do it in Dark Souls. I do it in Bloodborne.
I don't feel bad about doing it in difficult games.
No, that's really what don't. You have to do, mm-hmm. I feel. And that's my justification, especially in like Bloodborne and Dark Souls, to diverge a little bit. That's what the heroes of all the great Greek mythologies do. They don't beat the boss by just beating the shit out of it. They find some loophole.
They find a weak point.
Like when he beat Medusa, he beat her with a mirror and made her look at herself. He didn't fucking just kick her ass. They use whatever they have to their advantage. And that's how I justify it in those games. It's like, well, if you're going to get stuck in this doorway, that's your fault. I'm going to slice the shit out of you. That's how you do it, man. That's how a Greek mythology character would do it.
I have no disagreements.
Yeah.
So I play the same way.
I like, and this is another Dark Souls reference, the big enemies can be a challenge and are intimidating, as they should be, until you figure out what they need to be done to easily beat them.
Yeah.
Like, there are these big guys that kind of hop, and their only weakness is their eyeballs, but you could also just slide underneath them when they hop.
The pogos with the one legs, yeah.
Once they hop over you, you slide underneath them, and then you just continue on. They're too big to follow you through whatever tiny hallway you're going into. I love that. I love that aspect. You don't have to fight everything in this game.
You don't.
Yeah.
You don't. Just like in Dark Souls, you don't have to fight everybody. You can run past things sometimes, and you should.
My most hated enemy in this game.
Ooh.
Are the little frog enemies that you can only attack when they jump at you. Once they are on the ground, you shoot over them, and that infuriated me.
That was a carryover from Mega Man 2.
Oh, that was so annoying, because I had to wait, and they would almost always hit me, too, when I was waiting, because they get so close, and your attacks are untimed, and...
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so that was I get why they did it. I don't agree with it. I thought it was annoying because it's the one enemy that you can't outright shoot in the game.
You can't, but there's a specific pattern and a way to do it. And I think, like you said, it's a learning curve and you kind of get it. Like after playing a few times, you get it. And I don't feel like this game is cheap because once you learn the mechanics, you learn the way, like there are patterns, there are ways to do things. And I think the game is kind of smartly done. It's not like, so my wife and I recently, just digression, recently went through Donkey Kong Country, the Super Nintendo games, because I never played those as a kid because I didn't have a Super Nintendo.
See,
I had a Genesis.
I like Donkey Kong Country.
I had to go over to my friend's house and then I played like a level every now and then. Like I didn't get to play a lot of it. So we went back because those games were very important to her. And there's literally a level where you get to the end and the end is kind of obscure. And a second from the fucking end of the level, this little alligator comes out. And kills you.
Yeah.
And it's this giant fuck you moment. And I told Laura just straight out, like, I think I'm done. I don't want to play this game anymore because that's bullshit game design. There was no pattern there. That was just a fuck you from the developers. That was somebody was upset at their job this day and they're going to fucking pass their negative energy on. And I don't get that from Dark Souls. I don't get that from Mega Man. Dark Souls and Mega Man frustrate me, but like there's something there that makes me keep playing on.
Yeah. But, it hooks you.
Yeah, like I didn't have that in Donkey Kong, but like these games, hard, but there's a hook and I don't feel like it's mean-spirited. It's just like, this is how you're supposed to play the game, learn to catch on or don't, this game's not for you then. But it's not just like a fuck you to every single gamer. So that was a digression.
No, it's totally acceptable digression.
But, yeah.
So I really only have just a few more notes here. I mean, we are kind of burning through this because we did.
Yes, so long.
Metal Gear, but I...
And really, it deserves it.
I could still talk about Metal Gear.
Yes, I could too.
But,
and in all honesty, you said why I wanted to hear, which is like soundtrack 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
Because that's... I love the art design, the sprite work, which you commented on.
Again, it's fantastic in this game.
The soundtrack. Oh my God, Mega Man's just that had opening the theme, best on NES.
That opening theme made me want to press start and play this game. Because it's like, yeah.
Mine was the opposite. I'm going to sit on that title screen for 5 minutes and let this like, loop over and over.
Holy shit, I'm about to do some mega shit right here.
With the empty helmet on the ground. Just play it for me, Mega Man 3. Play it again.
This is hands down. And I have played and gone back now as an adult and beaten a lot of Mega Mans.
Mm-hmm.
This is the easiest Wily.
Yes, which is why I like
them. The castle and the Wily boss, especially like compared to all the bullshit you go through to get there.
Yeah.
I was expecting a grind. Really, when I got to this point, finally,
mm-hmm.
and then it turns out to be way easier than
it is
the shadow bosses that you fight.
Yeah, which are the amalgamations of previous bosses
from the Mega Man 2 bosses. Yeah. And this Wily was so fucking easy. I didn't die when I fought the actual final Wily boss.
Yeah,
maybe I mean, I had seen a YouTube video, but that was true to all the other parts, and all the other parts we're kicked my ass. All
right, so Mega Man 2 and Mega Man 3, like, I go back and forth on, and I think the reason I'm leaning more towards Mega Man 3 is, one, I think it has the better soundtrack.
Okay.
I think the levels are easier in Mega Man 2, but those Wily Sages are impossible. And the Wily Sages, in case we didn't make this clear, like, the final levels after you beat the bosses, they're so fucking hard. And the bosses are ridiculous. If you ever played Mega Man 2, one of the final bosses in the Wily levels are just like, there's 6 different turrets in a maze. And you have to use a clash bomb, which is a boss item, to open a gate to be able to shoot one of the turrets. And it's in this maze that is so specific, if you waste one fucking bomb,
you're screwed.
You're fucked because the turrets will shoot you automatically. And that's the kind of bullshit like I really don't like in Mega Man games. And that's why I lean with this, because it's like the levels are a grind, but like you should feel when you get to the Wily Sages that you're powered, that you have grown skill, and that it should be easier as you go along. And I feel like Mega Man 3 does that. It's like the perfect learning curve, because you get to the Wily Sages and you're able to kind of breeze through them because you're like, I'm fucking into this. I know what I'm doing now. Like, I'm pretty good.
That was once I finally started getting into a groove, I was actually surprised to find out how short all of the levels really were.
Yeah.
They are not long.
No.
There is a shitload crammed into them, but overall, they're really short.
They are.
So, and I'm not
which
even talking
I, which
Wily.
I like.
Just,
I like
yeah,
that.
I did too,
I like
especially, like I said, having to grind it out. Once I realized, I was like, well, these really are, I can do this. I just have to do this.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the Mega Man X games kind of lose me, because they get into like these really long freeform levels.
That
and
would be one. See, now Mega Man X is probably my favorite in the series.
Mega Man X, it's so weird, because like the Mega Man NES series has like this weird arcing curve. Like, it gets better as it goes until a point, and then it like kind of plateaus and then slowly drops. Mega Man X series, I think, hits its stride in the first game.
Absolutely.
And then just shits the bed with each sequel after
they
that.
Get
it just
so
gets
much worse.
Yeah, I don't think it ever picks back up in the Mega Man X
but
series.
But it's great, because Mega Man X is one of my favorite games. And
it
also was very close on my list of all.
Yeah, like, and I think if I had a Super Nintendo at the time, because I fucking really wanted one for Mega Man X, I'd see pictures in Nintendo Power and I'd just be so jealous, because I had a Sega Genesis. Like, well, I guess I get Sonic 3, but I don't get Mega
if
Man
we
have, X.
And I actually, you know, I'm going to totally give a call out here, and I think we
Please
should
do
a Mega Man X video, but one half of the Game Grumps, I don't know if you ever watch Game Grumps
I
on
do,
YouTube.
I do, yeah, because JonTron led me there.
I love
JonTron.
God, I love JonTron. But yeah. Aaron, actually, he has this
Ego
other...
Raptor.
Yeah, Ego Raptor. He has this other series of videos that he does called Sequelitis. Have you ever watched the sequelitis for Mega Man X?
Yeah, and really, like, I just...
Because he breaks it down perfectly.
It is.
That opening level is the most perfect opening level of any game ever, and I cannot disagree with him. It is so true.
It's well-designed and well-balanced.
And should we ever get into a Mega Man X episode, I will put that in the show notes, because I think everybody needs to watch that, because he is so succinct and descriptive, and it's nail on the head. He knows. It's so good, like, and that level is so good.
Yeah.
Explaining to you what you have to do and showing you without telling you. It's much like level 1-1 of Super Mario Brothers.
You get trapped in a pit, and you don't know what to do, so you're forced to experiment and figure out you have the ability to jump on walls now and jump higher. It is. And this fucking Capcom of old, which is, they were in the
pit. They're not here anymore, man. Just let them die. It's not Capcom of old, bro.
You know, all right, so Capcom back in the day were like 10 for 10. Like, they were like MVP.
Or if I saw Konami, I knew I was in for good shit. Also, Squaresoft. Those three opening jingles, I was like, okay, this is going to be good shit. Because Capcom also brought us Resident Evil originally. So.
Which I don't, and we can get into Resident Evils because I don't have any issues with the new ones. I still fucking like them. I think Resident Evil 6 is a great fucking game.
Wow, so that will be a good episode because I am so far on the other end of the spectrum.
Operation
of that.
Raccoon City, lots of fun.
That was fun.
Enjoyable.
So we are going incredibly long on this episode, so I do want to wrap it up.
Yes.
So I have one question for you based
Please
on
do.
This game. And overall, this was fun, but I'm curious about its placement. Explain, please.
Well, as I said, I grew up with a Nintendo. Mega Man is one of the games I played with my dad, who does not play many games anymore because controllers are too difficult now. Now there's these sticks on them, and he doesn't know what to do with them.
Sounds like my mom.
Well, that's both my parents. Though my mom has gone through Call of Duty recently, and she's kept up pretty well. Like, she... Like, I left her Left 4 Dead when I was in Korea, and she went through Left 4 Dead, and she's...
I cannot wait to have
shooters.
Your mother on the podcast.
I know, I would love for
this
to happen.
With my mother. It's going
to
happen. Spoilers. Mother's Day episode.
Yeah, we might have to work in, like, a Skype to get her here, because
she's
in North Carolina.
Yeah, we absolutely will. We will
we'll
get your mother and my mother on the podcast together. It's going to be Ashkevichka.
But my dad, like...
That's a made-up Jewish word.
No, it's not. It means it means something. I'm not good on the improv. But me and my dad, we used to play games on the Nintendo and Sega Genesis all the time. And, like, he soft Nintendo 64. We got Shadows of the Empire when the console launched.
Fair enough.
And that was the last game he could play. And after that, it was just too difficult for him, which I understand. It's games evolved really quickly during that time. But Mega Man is a game that we shared as a kid.
Awesome.
Like,
so it's a big nostalgia thing for
we
you.
We had Mega Man
I get that.
2,
okay.
And I think I got Mega Man 5 for my birthday. So I only had 2 and 5, but, like, when you were a kid in the 90s, you didn't have this money to get, like, all the games you wanted, so you'd trade. And I was just like, here's Mega Man 5, you give me Mega Man 3. And, like, I ended up playing Mega Man 1 through 6 because I just kept trading with all my friends.
Okay.
And Mega Man 3 is the one I couldn't trade.
Wow, okay.
I could not get rid of that. I'm like, you know, I don't need that one. I'm going to stick on to Mega Man 3.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, see what I did there.
That's fair. So, yeah, there's a lot of nostalgia tied to it. And it's just, like, if I look back to my childhood, it's fucking Mega Man. More than Mario, more than Zelda, more than anything.
It's
Mega Man.
I was a big Mega Man kid, too.
As
far as never owning them, that's great. I still love the series.
He's the character I would draw all the
time. Yeah, me too, man.
And I just, it resonates. I have so many art books of just Mega Man, like, in my shelf.
Cringeworthy, like, alert here. Very first time on the internet, I remember flirting with a girl on some chat room, and some other guy was hassling her, and I said, here, you can take my Mega Man Buster and fight him with it.
Oh, that's interesting.
Boom! Huge dork alert right here, everybody. Giant one. Your host.
There was some kind of chat program where you could have, like, an avatar that you would make out of pixels, and I don't remember what it was called, but I was on this back when chat rooms were a new thing.
I don't remember this.
But it was like this really shitty background, and you'd talk with people, but you'd have an avatar and, like, a little thought bubble come out. And I'd download Mega Man X avatars and Mega Man little bosses. And I'd be like, I'm Gyro Man, blah, 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 blah. It's like, I had nothing to do with this fucking
kid. God, I love
how
incredibly dorky and just...
God, yeah.
How do we have girlfriends
significant
now?
Others?
Yeah, I don't
Who
get it.
Who fucking puts up with it?
I don't get it at all.
I was Gyro Man on the internet.
Kudos to you two ladies. You really picked winners, I will say. So we're going to wrap it up because we are really fucking long. And thank you for listening to this entire thing.
You.
I hope that you were smoking weed or driving to your mother-in-law's house or something. Whatever. Thank you for listening to this.
Have a nice commute listening to us.
Please, please reach.
Debase ourselves.
Reach out to us. We are on the internet. We have a Twitter. We have a Facebook. We have our own website.
We are on iTunes.
We are on everything.
Probably
we are
soon
Stitcher.
To be Stitcher.
We are already on
we're
Stitcher.
We're already
dog.
On Stitcher.
That's what this fucking champagne was for. We drank champagne in celebration tonight, everybody. We are on the internet. Find us.
Yes.
Experience grind. It's not hard to figure
Please.
Out.
Also, comment. Like, go to Facebook, comment. Like, hey, have you played Mega Man or Metal Gear Solid? Let us know what you think. Were we fucking wrong to put these in our top
Please
5?
Please do that. Or, hey, have you guys played this game that existed at this point in time? No, you haven't. Maybe you should. And we probably will. We need advice, especially on video games. For some reason, we have movies figured out. Video games are hitting a wall. We can't come to an agreement.
We
so
need
please,
video games to play.
Advice. Hit us up. ExperienceGrind.com.
The weirder, the better.
ExperienceGrindPodcast at gmail.com.
Experience
Twitter.
Grind at Facebook.
At expgrind.com. ExperienceGrind.com was actually taken. So all that.
Oh, no.
Please hit us up. And, you know, we're going to give you a taste. Please tune in next week. We are back on the movies on this 2-week rotation. Mm-hmm. Ryan will be looking at.
I will be looking at Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yes, one of my.
One of Johnny Depp's best.
Yeah, it's my third favorite movie. And for Ryan, I will be looking at Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, one of the greatest comic book adaptations of all time. So, come the fuck back. Experience us. We will experience you. And thank you all so much.
We will experience you.
I am your host, Kyle, joined by my host,
Ryan Demarest.
And thank you so much.
Experience you. That's great. I like that slogan. You